Luke 13:10-17. Now Jesus was teaching in one of the synagogues on the Sabbath, and behold, there was a woman who had had a disabling spirit for 18 years. She was bent over and could not fully straighten herself. When Jesus saw her, he called her over and said to her, "Woman, you are freed from your disability." And he laid his hands on her, and immediately she was made straight, and she glorified God. But the ruler of the synagogue, indignant because Jesus had healed on the Sabbath, said to the people, "There are 6 days in which work ought to be done. Come on those days and be healed, and not on the Sabbath day." Then the Lord answered him, "You hypocrites! Does not each of you on the Sabbath untie his ox or his donkey from the manger and lead it away to water it? And not this woman, a daughter of Abraham, whom Satan bound for 18 years, be loosed from this bond on the Sabbath day?" As he said these things, all his adversaries were put to shame, and all the people rejoiced at all the glorious things that were done by him. The word of the Lord.
Why don't you stop doing that? You know, just forget about it. I mean, how is this going to help anything? Mike offered in what was meant to sound like a casual aside as he drove. He reached down and turned Slade's Run Away, playing on the 80s mixtape he'd made for the trip down. Lowly, I heard "Sea Chameleon" lying there in the sun. "All things to everyone, run away." I reached over and turned it up. "Sea chameleon right there in the sun. All things to everyone, run away." He reached over and turned it back down. "Sea chameleon right there in the sun. All things to everyone, run away." It was meant, his comment, to sound like a casual aside. But it was more imploring, more like, "What the hell is wrong with you? How long have we planned this trip? Why do you have to ruin it by obsessing about that car wash guy?" Me and my brother Mike were on this epic road trip that we'd been waiting to do for years. We were circumnavigating the Salton Sea in my 2006 Prius. The Salton Sea, located in the middle of the southern desert, is California's largest inland body of water. It's a 15-mile-wide and 35-mile-long saltwater endorheic sea, created 110 years ago when the California Land Development Company, while attempting to divert the Colorado River into its newly created irrigation canal system, instead made a mistake, an engineering blunder, and sent the Colorado River flooding into the desert, filling it up for 2 years before it could be contained. The result was the Salton Sea. We were visiting each outpost, town, and ruin of a town surrounding the sea. We started off in Brawley, where our family had once lived. But before we got out of town, even that first town, the adventure ran aground in a way that threatened to sink the whole adventure if we didn't get off these rocks pretty soon. After packing up the Prius and paying the bill at the Brawley Inn, we headed out of town for our first stop, the Sonny Bono Salton Sea Wildlife Refuge. It all happened so haphazardly. We were headed, and then Mike remembered he needed sunglasses. So I made a U-turn, and we headed to the brand new Walmart. Mike ran in while I went to the brand new Starbucks to get us coffee. Mike was waiting at the car when I came out. "Nice shades, Fonzie," I quipped. "Fonzie didn't wear sunglasses," Mike said in an exaggerated, dismissing tone. I opened my mouth to argue the point, but I honestly could not conjure any image in my head of Fonzie with sunglasses on. "Yeah, I guess you're right. I like them, though. Yeah, not bad for 5 minutes of Walmart." "Not bad. Perfect," I said. "Perfect? Mike said, pointing to a sign, "Perfect car wash. Grand opening today." "We have no choice," I said. "We're getting this car washed perfectly." I pulled into the empty lane, put my credit card in the terminal slot, and selected the ultimate perfect wash. Maneuvered onto the conveyor belt and put the Prius in neutral. The belt started moving us forward. Water sprayed and foam exuded from somewhere, covering the windows, and robot arms circled the car as we rolled along. "Pretty perfect," Mike nodded, right before we heard a loud thwack from the back of the car. We both turned around. The rear windshield wiper was gone, along with the whole oscillating arm thing. The mechanism broke off at the base. All the woo drained from my hoo. Before I could even check out the damage, I had to wait for the conveyor belt to slowly convey the car to the end of the wash. The robot arms continued circle to circle around us, unconcerned with the violence they had just committed. Finally, I pulled out into the parking lot and jumped out of the car and went around the back to inspect. "What?" I said to Mike. "What's cool? I mean, look, this notion of perfect here, perfect car wash, I mean," I could feel this anger boiling in me, coming up. "I mean, come on. I just spur of the moment, pull into this car wash just because, you know, just for the fun of it. It didn't even occur to me that if the car needed washing or not. I just pulled in and picked the ultimate perfect wash, not because I was concerned with the level of cleanliness I wanted. I just thought it sounded funny." And then bam, I hit the top of the car for emphasis, and I said bam again. "Can you believe this?" I asked Mike. "Or the universe, or someone. They have to pay for this, right? I mean, it's a new car wash. It's their grand opening. They can't let their robot arms go ripping things off cars. I'm going to tell them. I'm going to show them. I'm going to make them pay." Mike was looking at me like he knew he should have my back here, but also like he thought I should bring it down several notches. "Yeah, that's a drag." "A drag? I'm going to talk to someone right now." I went into the office, looked the high school girl sitting at the desk straight in the eye, and demanded to see the manager, the owner. "He wasn't there," she said. I demanded to see the manager. "No, there's not a manager," she said. I challenged that and explained what had happened. She seemed as unconcerned as the robot arm. Then Mike walked in. He'd found the remains of my wiper arm in the car wash bay. "Look," I said to her emphatically, pointing at the pieces in Mike's hand. She looked at them and then looked at her phone, reading a text. I asked her what she was going to do about it. She said she didn't know. "I think we could fix it pretty easily. I don't think the parts would cost that much," Mike said in a deliberately calm voice, taking a step back, trying to coax me to the door. Just then, a man came out of the back room wearing an overly bright uniform shirt and walked straight into my personal space. "I'm sorry," he said. "There's nothing we can do." "Are you the manager?" I asked. He said there was no manager. When I asked if he was the owner, he said no. At that point, I demanded he give me the owner's number. He told me that the sign said the car wash entrance explains that they are not responsible for certain kinds of damage. "A windshield wiper being ripped off by your robot arm? Does the sign say that?" I demanded. "Yes," he said. "Well, I want the owner's number. You broke my car and you're going to fix it." He clearly did not like the way I was talking to him. He grabbed a post-it and scribbled down a number and forced it into my hand. "Now, if you will please leave," he said. "I'm not going to leave until somebody tells me what they're going to do about my car." When I said that, he took a half a step forward, and I saw beyond the overly bright shirt, I saw the rest of him. He was at least 4 inches taller than I was, and since his chest was at my eye level, I could easily see that he worked out. "Let's go," Mike said, "What's the name?" I demanded, tilting my head back to look up into his eye. "What is the owner's name?" He grabbed the post-it note back from me and wrote a name in block letters and pushed the paper back into my hand. "Now we'd like to get back to our business," he said, making a dismissive gesture with his hand. "Not before I call the owner." I pulled out my phone and stabbed the number in with righteous anger. I held it to my ear and gave him a nod, like, "Now we'll see who's responsible." It rang and rang. No answer. I dialed the number again. It rang and rang. I held out the phone to the man so he could hear it ringing. "No answer," I said, like I'd caught him in a lie. He didn't look at the phone. He was looking at me, and he seemed very angry. "The sign clearly says we are not liable for certain types of damage, including damage to windshield wipers." I cannot stand to be ripped off. I cannot, but I saw right away that this guy was about to punch me. His eyes darkened, and there was a little twitch in his right bicep. I stepped back, and Mike opened the door and held it for me. I backed out, yelling, "It was not perfect!" The desert can take you and strip you down to some kind of truth. Or if it's not truth, it strips away the hiding places carefully constructed over years to keep the uglier sides of oneself out of plain view in one's daily life. The deserts, I don't know if it's the sun or the inescapable blazing light of the sun, or if it's the overwhelming heat which makes it hard to think, or the vast barrenness which drives one toward existential decay. Whatever does it, it had me. It exposed this kind of deep anger in me that had possessed me and first found voice in adolescence. This anger was stoked by this lie that I was entitled to an equal share of the good things in life: money, respect, success, love, friendship, and that the universe had long been conspiring to shortchange me on my portion, to fool me, to con me, to straight up steal my share and leave me looking like an idiot, leave me looking in from the outside, standing on the sidewalk with no recourse, weak. Most of the time, that demon hides away deep in my bones, but it had jumped out and seized me, and I was having a hard time getting back in control. I had called 3 times since we left the Sunny Bono Salt and Sea Wildlife Refuge 10 minutes earlier. The first time, a man answered, sounding not unfriendly, but businesslike. I told him that I wanted to speak to the owner, and that I was there earlier in the day, and that their brand new car wash robot arm had ripped off the rear windshield wiper, my 2006 Prius. There was a pause. I thought I heard an office chair squeak as it swiveled, and a short intake of breath. And then the phone went dead. "Can you believe it?" I railed. "He hung up on me. It was him. You know it was him. He doesn't even have the nerve to end the phone call like a man." "Like a man?" Mike offered, trying to play the nuance just right, not wanting to stoke my wounded, powerless man rage while doing a little reality check. The man at the car wash did not seem to lack nerve. His strained attempt at a playful look failed. I was silent. He looked at the road. He slowed down and took a right onto Gentry. I knew Mike was making sense. I knew that I had been being ridiculous. I tried to calm myself, and then I hit redial. No answer. Damn. I hit redial. No answer. Damn. Just, like, focus on your breath, Mike said. I don't want to focus on my breath right now. What does that even mean? People always say that, but who knows what it means? Nobody knows what that means. I wanted to be oppositional more than I wanted to discuss the trite use of the language of spirituality. A lot of people know what it means, Mike said. It's not a hard concept to understand. I know what it means. You are the one that said it to me first. I tell you to focus on your breath. Yes, we've talked about this a bunch of times. We talked about this on the drive down here, about focusing on your breath to meditate. To meditate? Yes. Shut up. I mean, I know, okay. I know, but I just don't want to do it right now. It is something that I've been trying to do myself, Mike said. It helps. Helps? I was belligerent. I was at the place where I was beginning to see reason, but I just could not unclench my fist to take it. Helps what? You told me it helps. What's your deal? It helps, okay? Like, say for whatever reason something happens to you, just a random thing in life, and it is unfortunate, but unfortunate things happen. And if you don't happen to be, let's say, in the best place when it happens, it could affect you way beyond how it might affect you if you were in a good place in life. And if you freak out beyond all proportion, then you should focus on your breath. And maybe that calms you down and you can let go of it. All right. I will focus on my breath. I don't know why this has got me. Sorry. Breath. I don't know if it was the violence of the robot or the dude pretending not to be the boss. It's lucky it rains less than 3 inches a year here, or otherwise this could actually be a safety issue. You are doing the opposite of focusing on your breath. Mike might have continued chastising me or instructing me in his spiritual practice, but we were entering Nyland, a shell of a town, broken like so many around the sea, but not abandoned. It must be hard not to think that the world is trying to kill you when everything around you is dying. Mike and I walked down through the town to the edge of the water at the Salton Sea. There were thousands of dead fish lining the beach. There are rotting bird carcasses. There are decaying cars, trailer homes, and buildings long dead. If you stay down here long enough, or even just an hour, the heat dries your skin to a chalky smoothness, loose and wrinkled. The blanching glare gets in behind your eyes, and the stench coming off the sea penetrates your hair. And when you look around at all the stuff used for living everyday life, the remains of houses, refrigerators, washing machines, clothes, beds, bikes, and toys strewn everywhere, picked over and ruined, the artist in you leaves, and things just seem broken and bad. When we got back to the car, it was covered in a layer of the Salton Sea's future. Dust, toxic dust. I sat in the driver's seat and looked through the toxic film on my front windshield. I clicked the wiper switch on and twisted it forward to spray the washing fluid, and I hold it to get a good soak and then release it. The wipers first smear a mud veneer, and then after another twist and spray, the wipers squeak the windshield clean, two shiny raised eyebrows cut out of the dust-covered car windshield. I imagine the salt and toxins beginning to eat away at the finish of the paint job on my car. My first thought is, I need a car wash. And then I twist the wiper switch to turn the rear wiper and spray the back window. I look in the rearview mirror and I see the fluid run down the window, cutting channels through the dust, while the stump of the wiper arm waves back and forth, impotent, embarrassed, apologetic. Let me drive, Mike says. Come on, let's switch. We get out and change sides. Mike gets in the driver's seat, turns the air conditioning on full blast. The bracing air brightens the mood somewhat. And then he turns the music back on for the first time since Nyland. Slade is still playing Run, Run Away on the mixtape. Mike and I loved this song the first time we heard it, riding around in another car back in St. Paul several decades ago. Of course, it's super catchy with the guitar hook and the vocal doubling, but it was the refrain that cracked us up. See chameleon lying there in the sun, all things to everyone, run, run away. We thought the line, all things to everyone, was so funny. It had a whimsical generosity that appealed to us. We started using it with our family and friends to resolve disputes. When things were tense or someone had wronged someone else, when things were at a standstill, one of us would proclaim, all things to everyone. And we could move on, say sorry, pull each other close. Basically, it meant, who knows who's right or wrong? We all want the best for everyone. As we got older, we talked about it, this song, the phrase, as a sort of existential blessing. See the chameleon lying there in the sun. Is it sunning itself? Or is it dead? Whatever. All things to everyone. We all receive the gifts of this life, embodiment, breath, the ability to love. And we all receive its injustice, its sorrow. All things to everyone is both a blessing and a statement of reality. With Mike and I both singing almost unconsciously, he turned the car around. Mike and I and my maimed 2006 Toyota Prius pulled onto Highway 111 and drove.